Hey, this is Chris McBrien from the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast, reminding you that the voting for the Podcast Awards is open to the public from now until June the 12th. Just visit podcastawards.com and vote for your favorite podcast in 20 different categories. And when you're there, please consider voting for Dear Mr. Fantasy in the sports category. You can vote once a day, every day between now and June the 12th. That's at podcastawards.com. Thanks, and now back to the show.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. Next guy we'll talk about looks like he's about 55 years old based on the MILB picture that Matt showed us before this.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
It's a combo, dude. Home run plus team.
All I can think of when I hear that is Tristan Cockcroft dancing.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Damn it, Mike, you stole all my material.
Hold on a second, though. Robbie Ray just homered for the Diamondbacks, so I just want to kind of throw that out there.
What?
He homered on Chris Archer. So if you guys don't think Chris Archer's going bad, then...
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 113 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner, and the intro music you were just listening to was generously given to us from Lorne Michaels and his band, The Biletone, so appreciate them for letting us use that and everything. Please go to Amazon.com and try out some of their stuff. Also, we are brought to you from OfficialFantasyRings.com. Use our promo code FWFB to get 10% off checkout when going and visiting there. And also, please rate and review the podcast. Every review helps us kind of go up the rankings and is really good for us. So please go and do that on Stitcher or on iTunes, whichever one. And today, obviously, you're hearing my voice, so Justin is not going to be on. But we do have the usual cast and crew. We'll start with Matt. Matt, how's it going, man?
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
I'm relishing in the victory of I beat Justin Mason. So take a look at his profile picture, everybody.
Yeah, take a look at his profile. The Giants obviously just played the Cardinals, and Matt and Justin had a little bet, and the loser had to put the other team's avatar as their Twitter avatar, which Justin will have for the remainder of the week. So I'm sure you're pretty happy about that.
Well, yeah.
Where can everybody reach you on Twitter, by the way, Matt?
MDTomp24. MDTomp24. Yes, sir.
And our resident Bachelorette fan, Eli, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm missing an episode as we speak, so let's get this moving so I can get back to the show.
I'm going to drag this out a bit. Where can people reach you on Twitter, Eli?
At EliFWFB.
Excellent. And our guest this evening is kind of a brethren from baseballhq.com, was, got the winner of the FSWA article of the year, I believe, last season for Colin McHugh. Mr. Ryan Bloomfield, how's it going, man?
It's going great, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm going to be even better when the Rays punish Robbie Ray this evening, since you are a Diamondbacks fan and I'm a Rays fan. I'm hoping that, things work out for the Rays this evening.
Yeah, I was considering a Twitter avatar bet as well with you, but I don't want Logan Morrison's face on my Twitter account.
I wouldn't make you suffer like that. I mean, that's just too much. I would at least put like Hank Conger on there or something like that.
How did you celebrate the Diamondbacks ending at Arrieta Street?
What's that?
So how did you celebrate the Diamondbacks ending Jake Arrieta's run?
Oh, yeah, that was good. If they could do that 30 more times and get a winning record, that would be great.
I think I would have picked it as long as I had. It's good. Head to end sometime.
Yeah.
I'll say this about the Diamondbacks and the Rays here. Both teams were, expansion teams at the same time in 2000 or in 1998, and only one of them has a World Series ring. So, we'll say that.
Yeah, but is there any more disappointing of a matchup than Chris Archer against the D-backs tonight this season?
Chris Archer's been absolutely hideous. I honestly don't even want to get into it anymore because he's injured. He's going to be out at some point soon. That's the only conclusion I can come up with. But
We have a laundry list of players and topics that we want to get to tonight. There's been a ton of things happening so far in the majors, but the first question I kind of want to ask you guys is I want you to choose a struggling veteran that you do not think will turn it around this season. Ryan, since you're the guest, I'm going to start with you, buddy.
Yeah, I'm going to go for someone I do not think is going to turn around. I'm going to go Carlos Gomez. That guy is just a wreck, physically, mentally, just about anywhere. So, you know, he was like a, I don't know, maybe fourth round pick in 15 team mixed leagues entering the season and striking out way too often, head's not there. And I think it's going to hurt some playing time here if it keeps up. So Gomez is my guy there.
I really wish you didn't say that since I have Gomez probably in half my leagues. So
yeah, I've got him in a couple too.
Eli, who is your guy?
Well, you know, just like you didn't like hearing Gomez, you're not going to like to hear mine. Corey Dickerson.
Oh,
I don't,
God.
Yes. Ooh. Yeah, I tried to warn you before the season that this was not going to be pretty, and you didn't listen. Dickerson slugged 675 at home and 410 on the road from 2013 to 15. So I thought, you know, those road slugging numbers would give you a good barometer of what kind of numbers he'd be putting up this year in Tampa Bay. And what do you know? He's slugging 422. Pretty similar, isn't it? I mean, obviously he's not hitting at a great ballpark, but that was one of the reasons why I hate him this year. He's got terrible plate discipline. He murders his on-base percentage, so he's not going to score any runs. He doesn't run, so he's not helping you there. He's empty power. Like, I don't know why people like empty power guys. Like, people shit on Billy Hamilton because all he gives you his speed. Well, how is it any different than Corey Dickerson, who all he gives you is home runs? So I'm anti-Dickerson. I'm out.
This is just getting worse and worse as we go. Dickerson, you know, certainly the first thing that I thought of when he went to the race was that he was going to lose batting average. But, you know, obviously he slipped the last, you know, 3 weeks or so. So, you know, he's been struggling. I do think he's going to pick it back up, though. I mean, his power's legit to any field. I think that, you know, in 12-team and 15-team leagues, you know, maybe you can cut and bait with him because there is other power sources on the waiver wire. But in terms of, like, AL only and stuff, you need to keep him around because he's going to be a legitimate. So I still think he's a surefire bet to hit 25 home runs this year. And, yeah, he might, you know, be an empty power source.
Yeah, that's all he's going to give you. He's not going to run. He's not going to hit for average. He's not going to score runs in that shit-ass offense. Screw him.
I don't know how much, you know, Reyes and Carlos Gomez hate I can take. Matt, who's your player?
The guy I think is not going to turn around this year, unfortunately. We kind of piled on him before, but going with Prince Fielder. We talked about him a couple weeks ago. I think he's hurt, and he's got major confidence issues and everything like that now. And Texas is going to call up Gallo, and Gallo's going to play first. And there's so many options. Profar needs at-bats now. Mazzara is going to play. Chu's going to come back eventually. I think Fielder's going to get squeezed out maybe for this year. Expect a long DL stint. I mean, Fielder was probably a top 60, 70 player, and it's a shame it's come to this, but I think he could pretty much cut him everywhere. I don't think it's going to happen. I see the most he's going to hit is 230, 240 this year, even if he does turn it around, and I'm not going to gamble on that. I think he's done.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Fielder at all. I wrote about him before the season started as a first base bust. Actually, you know, he was going to be a DH in a lot of places as well. But overall, I was not a fan of Fielder coming in. I still feel the same way. I completely agree with that. And that was actually going to be my player I was going to talk about. But instead, I'll turn over to Curtis Granderson. Didn't draft him anywhere prior to the season starting, but, you know, he's really struggling against righties. Last season, he hit 280 against them, and this year he's hitting 205. The power is still somewhat there. He has 9 home runs, and his home run to fly ball rate is still about the same as it was last season. But overall, the strikeout rate is getting worse. The, you know, BABIP is also getting worse as well, even if it kind of regresses back to, you know, where it's been throughout his career, which is, you know, about 300 or so. I still don't think the batting average is going to be much better than what we've seen, maybe 220 the rest of the year. So overall, I'm just not a fan of Curtis Granderson. I think he's actually, you know, a little bit, you know, about the same as Corey Dickerson. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, Corey Dickerson plays for the Rays, so I might be seeing more of that. But I'm not really a believer in Curtis Granderson. Any thoughts on any of these guys before we move on? Guess not.
Yeah, I don't like any of them either, so I'm with you.
Bunch of garbage.
All right, let's talk about the next little topic here. If you could stash one rookie for the rest of this season, one on your NA list or whatever, who would it be? We'll start off and go back around with Matt.
It's a good question. I would still say, does Urias count? I mean,
I still think he's going to make an impact for the Dodgers this year because their rotation options are thin, and the guy's coming back from injury, but they're no guarantee. I play in a lot of holds leagues too, so I guess that's probably why, but I'll go Urias.
All right. Let's go with you, Eli. Who would you
well,
go with?
Can we debate that real quick? Because I'm not buying that. I just feel like they're going to treat him with kid's gloves. I know there's reasons to like it because it's such a great place to pitch, but, I mean, he may not get a lot of starts. He's not going to close or anything like that. So, I mean, I just don't – does anyone else agree with Matt? Because I just don't think
he's – I think a better option – I was either going to go that or I was going to go Glass now. Or no, excuse me, I was going to go Tyon because I think Tyon.
Okay, well, back to me because my pick is Jameson Tyon. Stop stealing my thunder.
Well, you wanted another one, so there you go.
Yeah, I mean, 6 walks and 61 strikeouts and 62 innings. A lot of his problems in the past was, you know, control, and he seems to have righted the wrong there. It seems like he's also leapfrogged Glass now. I think he'll be the first one to get the call. I think if Nicasio struggles on Tuesday, that could be it, and Tyon could move right in. And I just think that everyone in fantasy right now could relate to the problem with bad pitching. Like, we've all been burned by Archer this year and Harvey and Lariano. There's so many guys that have been killing us. I think we all need a jolt in the pitching staff, and this is the kind of guy that could do it at a pretty low cost. Like, you can get him just about everywhere right now. And there's a lot of leagues I'm in where people haven't been stashing him, so I think now's the time to get him if you can.
I love Tyon. Ryan, who's your guy?
I'm going to go chalk here and go Tyon. I know it's boring to keep picking him, but I think he's the next guy. The Pirates GM, Neil Huntington, actually, they asked him about that yesterday, when Tyon would be called up, and he really didn't deny Tyon not calling him up. Said he's going to get at least one more start at AAA, and that's probably it. So I think we'll see Tyon up in Pittsburgh in mid-June, and I think that will be before Glass now, just because of the amazing command. You guys mentioned 6 walks and like 62 innings. That's the kicker for me. So I think he's going to make an immediate impact.
Poor Jeff Locke, man. Poor Jeff Locke.
And I let me say, I think what Tyon's doing is impressive. I mean, he's gone 6 innings or more in every single start. Matt and I actually talked about him a couple weeks ago on the Prospect podcast. I love Tyon. Now, this is my question. If they do bring him up, how long do you think he sticks the rest of the season? Do you think that this is a more of a, you know, short-term type of deal? You know, I'm just wondering what type of real impact do you think he'll have? Because, I mean, really, he hasn't pitched full-time since 2013. And I understand, you know, after Tommy John, it wasn't, you know, the arm issue that kept him out last season. But, I mean, how many innings do we realistically think he's going to get the rest of this season? Because, I mean, he's already at 60. You know, he pitched 147 in 2013. You know, I'm just pitching it out to you guys. What realistically can we expect?
I think you could look for him to end up around 130, 140. I mean, he's older but he's 24. And, you know, they're going to go with him before they go with Glass now. So if Tyon is good, they're going to ride him out because then maybe they don't even have to use Glass now until September, so his service clock won't start because, you know, Pittsburgh, that's got to be in the back of their mind. That's kind of how they operate. So I could see 130, 140, but I'm not going to say much more than that.
What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I think that's about right. So like 2011, he had 92 innings, 2012, 142 innings, and then, as you said, 147. I don't think he'll get back to like 150, but I think 130 solid innings. So that gives him, what, 70 more innings, which is, you know, maybe 12, 13 starts. So,
yeah, I don't even care about the innings limit. I just want good innings on my pitching stats right now.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're one to talk, Eli, because you hate rookie pitchers. So it's kind of interesting that you're so high on Tyon. So you would rather have Tyon than Berrios, than Snell, than Giolito, than Urias?
Eli. Yeah, all the above, yes.
All right. That's interesting. And Glass now, for that matter. My guy is going to be Joey Gallo, and the reason being, I think that if he gets the call and plays full-time, he gives you the highest upside of anybody in the minors right now. And, you know, he's done well in, you know, minimizing how much he strikes out compared to past years. The power is still legit. You know, I think really it's just a matter of playing time, and, you know, a big baseball HQ motto is draft skills, not roles. No, he doesn't have a role, but I've been keeping him, you know, plugged in many NA slots, waiting.
Yeah, how's that work? You and I on the barf team, like, have been stashing guys left and right, and they haven't panned out.
Well, in 12 team leagues is kind of different. You know, it's a shallow league. You can't just keep one guy, you know, just sitting on your bench for the, especially if you have no NA slots, because that costs us a roster spot. So this is different if it doesn't cost you an actual player on your team. You know, I think that Gallo is my guy. You know, typically I go offensive, you know, with an offensive piece whenever I do stash a player, because I think that, you know, typically one of these, you know, prospects that is, again, on the offensive side of the ball, you know, they make a bigger impact than pitchers, you know, typically or historically for that matter. So that's just me on the Gallo front. But I completely agree with Tyon. You know, if you talked to me a couple weeks ago, I was saying Glasnow was my guy, and I still love Glasnow, but I think, you know, based on what I've been continually seeing out of Tyon, that he's kind of bought me in a bit more, and I think he will be the first Pirates prospect to be brought up whenever that does indeed happen. So I'm on board with y'all.
All right. So you can say I was right from the prospect pod?
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm never going to. No, I'm just kidding. Well, we don't know if you're right. We'll see what happens first.
You're right. We don't know yet.
All right, like I said, we have a ton of players to discuss and a ton of situations. It was a big week in baseball. The first topic is the Cardinals are going to be bringing up Johnny Peralta, and they sent Colton Wong down. Matt, you're our resident Cardinals lover. What is going on with this infield situation, and what can we expect the rest of the year?
Well, they're shuffling around the pieces a little bit. Peralta's actually been playing third base in his rehab assignment, so he's been doing that. He's going to play third, it looks like, probably I'd say 80% of the time. He'll play short also, give Diaz a break against tougher righties, I think. Carpenter is going to move around from third over to second, and he's also going to play some first. But Matt Adams is hitting right now, so Adams is going to play first. Adams has been surprising this year, so hopefully you guys got a little piece of that in NL only or something, because he's been nice. With Carpenter adding second base eligibility, already has that in Yahoo Leagues. He's going to add first base eventually. Not that that's huge, but position flexibility is nice. Diaz is the real winner here, because a lot of people assumed he would lose playing time when Peralta came back. Looks like he's not going to. And Colton Wong, should we even get into this, man? I'll throw some stats at you. From July last year, through the playoffs, he hit 235, 296, 307. And then this year, he also hit 225, 312, 292, and that's five straight months of horrible baseball. He's a bad defensive player. He makes a lot of bonehead mistakes on the bases. I think him going down to Memphis is probably the best thing for him. He's still a big part of the Cardinals' future. John Mozeliak signed him to a five-year, $25.5 million extension this offseason, so that looks terrible now. I still think that'll be fine. But he's going to Memphis to get regular at-bats because he doesn't have position versatility to be a good bench bat for you. So we'll see where it goes. I expect him to be up. Keeper league, you hold him. Dynasty league, you hold him. Keeper league, if you can stash him, I'd do it. I think he'll still be up later in the year and get significant at-bats in July, August.
Here's my question for you, Matt, before we jump the other guys in on this. Now, Jed Jerko, you know, and with Peralta coming back as well, do you think that Peralta, you know, with especially NL-only owners that have, you know, held on to Peralta all year waiting for him to come back, and then you're also your NL-only owners that have held on to Jorko, you know, kind of getting, you know, part-time at-bats, do you think that they're just still going to kind of, you know, play 50% of the time, each of them? Like, Peralta owners probably expect him to play 75 to 80% of the time. Do you think that that's going to be the case?
I think that will be how it works out. I think Jerko right now is probably nothing more than a pinch hitter now. Because, I mean, he's kind of piggybacking off Wong, playing against lefties when Wong wasn't around. But now Greg Garcia's around too, and Matheny likes him. And Garcia's actually, he's been a nice, I mean, he's not a fantasy asset or anything, but he's one of those weird guys, man. He just comes in and he always does things well. He moves runners over, and from a real baseball standpoint, he catches everything hit to him, has a decent arm. Can play all the infield spots. He's a more valuable utility guy than Wong, which is kind of why Wong is out. But Jerko, I think Jerko's just a pinch hitter against lefties now. I think he loses a lot of playing time.
All right. Eli, who do you want more? Johnny Peralta or Lidmus Diaz?
Is there a third option?
Neither.
Oh, come on, man.
No, I'm not a big fan of any of these. I mean, Peralta's fine. Like, he's, you know, he's aged fairly well, I guess, but I mean, he's coming off an injury. He's old as hell. How productive is he really going to be? He's probably, you know, 14 team mixed league relevant, but whatever. And Diaz, like, I never really believed in him, and he's starting to suck a little bit in May. And he's, so I don't know, man. These guys are whatever. They don't excite me. I know they excite Matt because every Cardinals player is the best player ever, but
they don't. It's a weird situation to be in. I think Diaz, like I said, I think Peralta's going to play about 80% of the time. Jerko is probably a non-asset in any format now. He probably was before this, but definitely now. Yeah, not much else to talk about it. But if another thing, too, I guess, is if Moss or Adams have been relatively productive at first base, if for some reason they stop being productive, Carpenter will shift over to first, and that'll open up more time at second base for maybe Diaz goes back there. Who knows? There's a lot of options here now, and it's kind of scary. You're giving Matheny a lot of options to play with, but we'll see what happens.
Hashtag Mike. Ryan.
All caps.
Hashtag Mike.
Ryan, what do you make of this infield? And you, please answer my question. Jai Peralta or Lidmus Diaz?
I'm going to go Diaz. I'm a little bit concerned about Peralta just because obviously his age, 34 now. He's had a great kind of late career power surge, but I don't know how he's coming off a torn left thumb ligament. I don't know how that's going to sap his power and if he's actually, you know, fully healed, or if that's going to linger. So I'm really concerned about Peralta. Yeah, he's going to initially get probably the most playing time at third base, but I would rather have Diaz for the rest of the year. Obviously, different types of players. Peralta might get you that power. But again, I'm a little bit concerned that that's going to go down. So I would go Diaz. Elite contact rate. Hits the ball in the ground and can fly. So.
I was going to say that Diaz with the contact rate and Peralta's wrist, or excuse me, his thumb, he's the same injury Molina had. Molina still has, because if you watch him the other night, you can tell something's wrong with him too. He's all the low pitches, he's not catching them because his thumb is hurting. Because when you're when you're catching him, to catch the low pitch, you have to turn your thumb down. With the catcher's mitt on, your thumb is to the ground, and the ball is going to be hitting directly on the thumb when you're catching the ball there. And he's not even catching those balls. He's kind of using the glove to knock him down because his thumb must be bothering him, and he's been pretty terrible with the plate. So.
Yeah, if it has any effect like it did on Molina, it's going to be ugly for Peralta.
Agreed.
Yeah, I had concerns about Peralta coming into this year. You know, one HQ metric that I love to use, that I'm sure you like to use as well, Ryan, is the expected power index, you know, metric, and that's kind
beautiful
of
beautiful metric.
Yeah, and it dipped down a ton last year in 2015. When you add in a thumb, you know, ligament problem, then I think that that's going to sap the power even more. And with Diaz, you know, he's really impressed me. You know, I don't think he's going to hit, you know, 30 home runs this year, but I do think more than 20 or about 20 is in the cards for him. And I think that he's going to get a lot of playing time. So I think
nice pun, Mike, in the cards.
I didn't even mean to do it. It just happens. I do want to mention with Colton Wong, last year in the first half, .280 batting average, 7 stolen bases, 9 home runs. Since July of last season, he has 3 home runs. And then he's batting .231, less than a .300 on base, and a .300 slug exactly. You know, not doesn't strike out a ton, but only a 6% walk rate since that time. Obviously, he struggled, and it's not just a recent thing. This has been something that's gone on for a long time. My question before we continue to go on for the Cardinals for 30 minutes is, do NL-only owners, not deep mix, but NL-only owners, do you keep Colton Wong around in case he comes back up this year? I'll start with Ryan.
I do. If you have room for him, absolutely. This is a guy who the last two seasons entering 2016 had some great all-around numbers and some pretty solid underlying skills to support it. Something's obviously wrong with him this year. I agree with Matt. Going down to Memphis is probably the best thing for him, just to kind of regroup, get his stroke back. And I would expect him to be back sometime in the second half and playing better. So if you do have room, NL only, especially middle infield, I would hold on.
Anybody disagree with that?
I agree.
How about you, Eli?
I just think it's irrelevant. Like, it's if you have, I don't know. Like, so like if you're trying to make up ground, like you need to get rid of them and try to get stats. I guess if you're doing well and you have that luxury, hold on to them. I guess, right. But I don't think it's a workout.
Depends how much room you have. If you've got like 2 bench spots, that's kind of risky. But
he's still got 15-15 upside. I mean, legit. Mm-hmm. That's not anything you're going to find at this late in the season on the waiver wire. So mm-hmm. I mean,
still 24, 25. So,
yep.
Yeah, I think in mixed leagues you can cut bait and only. I think that you keep them around. Let's move on. We had a big trade for Eli's love team, you know, the White Sox. They acquired James Shields, and they traded Eric Johnson for him, and I believe Fernando Tatis's brother or son. I don't even know which one at this point.
But grandson.
Either way, Eli, what do you think about this move from a fantasy perspective for James Shields? Do you think that this makes his value worse or better all around? What are you feeling about Shields?
Well, I think it's fair to say it makes it worse. Anytime you go from the NL to the AL, that usually spells bad things. And also, anytime you go from San Diego's ballpark to U.S. Cellular, that's not good either. I do think people are, you know, drastically overrating the how bad this is going to be for him. You know, before that disaster outing he had the other day, he still had an ERA at 3 and almost a strikeout per inning. So he's still okay. And, you know, just he's averaged 197 strikeouts the last 3 years. And he had some success in the AL just a couple of years ago. I know he's not quite the same pitcher now that he was then, but I still think he's okay. Anytime you can get a good innings eater on your team that won't kill you in certain places, that gets enough strikeouts, is fine with me. I mean, I like him better in AL only, but he's still a decent mixed league option.
Yeah, I don't think that this I don't think this really does much to his value. I think he stays pretty much about the same. You know, San Diego, prior to popular belief, or contrary to popular belief, it's not an amazing stadium to actually, you know, pitch in. It's got some, you know, decent park factors, and then, you know, obviously the Cell is a place that nobody wants to pitch in. But overall, I mean, he's upped his ground ball rate this year. The strikeout rate isn't amazing, but, you know, what concerns me is that lefties are punishing him. They're hitting almost 300 so far, and also the fact that he gives up a mammoth amount of home runs. The last 2 years, 18% and 15% home run to fly ball rate, respectively. His first pitch strike rate has gone down significantly as well, which has crept into his walk rate, which is almost 4 walks per 9, which he also did last season. So I'm hoping that, you know, hopefully he gets the walks under, you know, underway here and gets, you know, a little better in that. And I think that all starts with the first pitch strike rate. Ryan, how do you feel about Shields going forward?
Yeah, I'm probably more pessimistic than most on Shields. Obviously, the move to the Cell isn't the best thing for him. Mike, you mentioned that homer fly ball rate. It's been above 10%, and it's been 10% or above every year of his career except 2013. But the last 3 seasons, his velocity's gone down: 92.4, 91, and then this year 90.1. So you've got that falling velocity. Obviously, a ton of innings on this guy's arm. And Mike, you mentioned that first pitch strike rate's going down as well. So I don't know if the walks are going to return. So you know, he's got a 4.28 ERA right now. The skills are, you know, roughly on par with that. I think this will be his first year with a 4+ ERA since 2010.
Yeah, I didn't really say how I felt about him. I think that he's an AL only guy, and in deep mixed, I think he's like a starting pitcher 5, you know, 4 or 5, somewhere in that region, maybe 6. Depending on your rotation. Matt, do you disagree with this?
I don't. I think it was still a worthwhile gamble for the White Sox, though. I mean, they didn't give up much of anything. No offense to Eric Johnson and his family, but he's not much of an asset in fantasy baseball. But I do think it's a worthwhile gamble. And you said something about Shields struggling against lefties, but in the AL Central, there's really no big lefty bats, right? I mean, Alex Gordon's hurt. He's coming back, but he's hurt right now. Moustakas is out. He might thrive in that.
Posner's the only one that scares me.
Yeah. That's a good
point. That's
Joe
a good
Mauer.
Point.
Hello.
But I mean, I think
this isn't 2008.
That's something that's worth considering. I mean, he's in a division full of heavy right-handed bats, so maybe that'll play.
How about this, Matt? I'll ask you this: do you think Eric Johnson has any value in the NL?
NL only, yeah. I think he's not going to get the strikeouts, but he can give you decent rate stats in Petco. But like you said, it's not that great of a park to pitch in, like people think it is. So,
Go to me first on this one as the resident White Sox expert. No, I don't like Eric Johnson. He's had opportunities, what, in 4 straight years in the majors, hasn't done anything with it. 49 walks in 98 innings and only 77 strikeouts. And he hasn't even been good in AAA this year. 17 walks and 35 strikeouts in 49 innings. And he was also just one of the worst pitchers in all of minor league baseball in 2014. Like, he's shown flashes from time to time in the minors, but even that's not been consistent. I know it's good for his value to go from the White Sox to the Padres, but I'm not buying it. No way.
I'm not either. I'm not a fan. Do you feel differently about that, Ryan?
I agree with you both. Flyball pitcher, gives up home runs. Again, talked about it a couple of times. Petco's not the elite pitcher park that we thought it was, and those walks. So his trajectory, Johnson's trajectory, is going the wrong way.
Completely agree. Let's move on to a series of injuries that are kind of going to impact fantasy teams one way or another. We'll talk about David Wright, Hunter Pence, and Mark Teixeira. You know, really with Teixeira, there's not much, you know, fantasy value to be, you know, had here unless you, you know, I believe they have what, Chris, I can't remember who it was, the old journey.
Chris Parmalee?
Yeah, Parmalee, unless you like Chris Parmalee for like DBL only. I will say that, you know, Hunter Pence, you have, you know, Mac Williamson that's coming up and Jared Parker who has had, you know, he just hit a 2-run bomb last night or a 3-run bomb, you know, so he kind of offers some power, but, you know, all in all, I'm not really a fan of anybody that's going to be replacing any of these guys. I think the one, you know, player that gets an uptick in value based on any of these three injuries is Wilmer Flores. And I think that that just pretty much cements him as close to an everyday player. Matt, how do you feel about this situation? Is there any fantasy value to be had?
You left out Nick Swisher, man. He might come up for the Yankees. You never know.
Whatever.
No, I don't think there's anything out of this. I do like Williamson. I'm very high on Williamson. I know you and Eli both are also. I think if he gets enough time, he's always been a guy that's had freak injuries. He's coming off of Tommy John surgery that he had, what, 2-3 years ago. He has good power. Rough park for him to play in, rough division for the power to play, but I think Williamson's worth a flyer. You could do a lot worse.
How about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm kind of glad Justin's not on the podcast tonight because he's got a fuck Gregor Blanco hashtag going. But I actually think Blanco gains a lot from the Pence injury. Here's a guy who hit .291 with 13 steals in basically a half season of at-bats last season. He's got a great plate approach and he can run even though he's 32. But I think he's going to play nearly every day in San Francisco. So I would get some shares of him in NL only.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Parker is a lefty, so he'll get a lot of run as well. You know, I think Williamson is more of a speculation in NL only. I think really all these guys are more of a speculation in NL only anyways. But Williamson, I think, would have to really go on a tear before he gets somewhat easy playing time. I just don't see him getting regular time at all. Eli, do you feel any differently about this?
I feel like the Giants are going to make a trade. Like, I just think they're too good of a team.
Brian Braun.
Too high of hopes to, like, be relying on Gregor Blanco and Mac Williamson. I like Mac Williamson, but come on, let's be real. They're going to make a deal. They'll make a deal for a shitty veteran, and I'm sure that veteran will turn out great and help them win a World Series because, you know, Giants.
I think they're going to get Ryan Braun. They're going to get Ryan Braun.
Maybe. Okay.
That would make sense.
Yeah,
It's rumored to get Upton in this offseason. Rumor they're looking for a big bat. They're rumored in all the bats, never materialized. I think Ryan Braun makes too much sense.
Yeah, and we didn't mention, was it Angel Pagan? I think that if he ever stayed healthy for a series, he would you know, obviously play. But I don't think he's going to stay healthy. And even if he is, you know, quote unquote healthy, he will only be on the field probably, you know, 4 out of every 7 days, maybe 5, because they probably want to restrict him a bit. So overall, I think we've talked way too long about the Giants, especially when Justin's not on here after already talking 30 minutes about the Cardinals. So let's move on. Let's talk about Raisel Iglesias. Actually, Anthony Desclafani is going to be making his way back here pretty soon too. But there's news breaking out now that Iglesias is going to be moved to the bullpen, which I know a lot of fantasy owners are upset about because they obviously drafted him after seeing him on every sleeper list known to man prior to the season starting. And you know, this was part of the issue is I felt like his value was already at peak when you drafted him that high. I disagreed with paying that price for him, and now he is in a situation where he's probably going to be in the bullpen at least the majority of the games for the rest of the season. If not, you know, he'll make a handful of starts the rest of the way, at least according to the Reds. Things could obviously change, but Ryan, what's your outlook on Iglesias the rest of the way?
I don't like the move to the bullpen, but you know, potentially. And just remember back, this guy was everyone's favorite sleeper entering the season, but a lot of people forgot about that injury risk, and that came back. So, you know, you've got a guy, he's got the skills, but he hasn't really shown it over a long period of time, and that injury risk is just too high for me. So I'm really not, anytime you're dealing with shoulder issues, I don't think that's something you want to invest in.
Yeah, and he had problems prior to the season starting. You know, I mean, he missed a ton of spring time. People just kind of glossed over it like it was nothing. And, you know, I continue to say on Twitter, like, hey, he still hasn't pitched yet. You know, what's going on here? Either way, Eli, how do you feel about this situation? And do you think that this presents any type of buying opportunity?
Obviously, I really like him. He's talented. I love the movement he gets on his pitches and the variety of pitches that he throws. But I actually think this could be good for his value, potentially, the rest of the season. I think he's still around 3 weeks away, so I wouldn't expect him until the very end of June or early July. But the Reds' bullpen is so crappy, and I know Segrani's pitched okay in the closer role, but I think most managers don't like using a lefty in the closer role. And maybe they want to see if Iglesias can be a long-term closer. So at some point, maybe he does get some chances to save some games.
Bingo. That's exactly what I was kind of getting at is, you know, as much as, you know, I'm upset about the situation, him going to the bullpen, I was wondering, you know, if you guys felt the same way, if there was a possible buying opportunity because that bullpen is so bad and they would have to use him in high leverage situations. If that's their plan to keep him in the bullpen the rest of the way, there is also that possibility that they want him to come back and start. They just want to give him some time to kind of recuperate and, you know, kind of limit his innings and everything. Matt, do you think that there's a buying opportunity here or are you out?
Yeah, I agree with what you guys are saying. I need to know more information about this, though. I mean, if he's too hurt to start or too hurt to pitch, why are they using him out of the bullpen? Like, or to start, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, I need more information about this. Like, what are they conceding that he has an injury that he can't go a long stint? Like, what are they trying to do? Like,
well, yeah, he has a shoulder impingement. So,
I saw that. But like, if he's hurt, then why is he even going to pitch?
Well, obviously he's been rehabbing and he's going to be coming back, so they feel like he is ready. Okay. You know, but they just don't want to put that, you know, kind of burden on his arm is what it's what the Rays should have done with Drew Smyly a while ago. Which
yeah,
still
I could see that then. I guess another thing too, maybe this opens up a rotation spot for Cody Reed or something in August. Who knows?
Well, I think he definitely gets the call at some point later on in the season, but that's another topic. Anyways, let's move on to the next situation here, and it's the Houston bullpen. Obviously, Ken Giles was the guy that was highly sought after in drafts coming into the year. He had a crazy bad April to the point where, you know, people were dropping him in a few places I actually saw. And recently, Luke Gregerson has been good, but then recently he's blew his fifth save of the year, and Will Harris has come in, and since really the second half of last season, been absolutely dominant. He got the latest save chance for the Astros, and now we have gotten word that it's going to be more of a committee situation. Matt, we'll turn around to you. Who is the guy that you would like the most out of this kind of group here? And if you had to put a number on it, or if you had to pick a guy for the rest of the year to lead Houston in saves, who would it be?
I think Will Harris might be the guy to grab now. I think he's, like you said, he's been stable for going on 2 years now out of the bullpen. He's got that monster cutter, the out pitch to rely on. But I still think they find a way to get Giles in there later in the season. I mean, they paid a bounty to get him from Philly. So I know he struggled earlier. I think he'll be the guy about a month or two from now, but I think Will Harris won't do anything to get taken out of the job. I just think they're going to put Giles in there to justify the trade kind of deal.
But how do you feel about this, Eli?
Yeah, I'd like Will Harris for at least the next little chunk of time. Anytime a manager says bullpen by committee, it usually means the first guy that gets a chance, if he actually gets the save, then he's going to maintain that job for until he doesn't. So Harris is the one who got the save, so that's encouraging. 4 walks, 29 strikeouts. He's got a ton of holds. His ground ball rate's insanely good. I think there's no reason to see why he'd lose the job anytime soon. I'm riding Harris for a while. I keep your eye on Giles, but right now it kind of seems like Harris is the guy.
So you would pick Harris for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think I would.
How about you, Ryan?
It's so close between those two. And actually, Michael Feliz has been just been as good as these guys, too. Houston's bullpen is nasty. I don't know. If I had to pick one guy, obviously Harris getting the first save is a good indicator. And I like to look at one of the metrics we use at HQ is leverage index.
Oh, so, Ryan, why'd you have to bring that up? Go ahead.
Because it's amazing, man.
It is amazing.
Giles and basically leverage index is basically the average amount of leverage in a game situation when that reliever gets brought into the game. And it's a great reflection of, obviously, the manager's confidence in those relievers. And Giles and Harris are neck and neck with that. So it's really splitting hairs. If I had to go the rest of the season, I'd still probably lean Giles. He's been a lot better since that awful April. 32 strikeouts in 24 innings. Yeah, the walks have been there too, but I would lean Giles given the price they paid for him. But over the short term, we may see Harris in there a little bit, but it's really anyone's guess. This is why I hate closers.
Yeah, but you know, most people were saying buy closers early because you don't want to go through this whole, you know, mix and match situation. And obviously, it doesn't matter. You know, any year, it just really does not matter. There's always going to be a closer problem, and it's always going to be a flip-floppy situation. I think I agree with you guys that I think Will Harris is the guy right now. And, you know, I mean, he has a 70% ground ball rate right now. I mean, that's absolutely sick. His swing strike rate is almost up to 15%, which is absolutely amazing as well. I think Harris, I agree with you guys. I think Harris is the guy right now, but I have not gotten rid of Giles anywhere that I've drafted him because I still have faith that eventually he will get that job. You know, hopefully this the rest of this month here, he gets a couple of closer situation or gets a couple saves to kind of build some trust with AJ Hinch. And then, you know, all of a sudden maybe he'll kind of be the best guy to have the second half of the season. So I'm going to go with Giles as the Houston reliever that I think has the most saves, you know, at least in the rest of the season or forward. But I really like what all of the bullpen is doing for them. I think that they're really doing the best KC impression they can possibly do. So let's move on. We'll go to Nick Tropiano, who just got put on the DL. Before that, though, was really doing some solid work. Matt, how do you feel about Tropiano the rest of the way? And are you holding on to him anywhere that you have him?
I am holding him. You always have those weird guys that you've always liked for no reason. This is kind of the guy for me. I've been in on him for a while since 2014 or 2013. I think we've led the AA in strikeouts. I think when he's with Houston, I like the. I've always liked this kid. I like the body. Not very projectable, but I mean, I think he's very solid. And what he was doing this year with the Angels kind of shows you what he can do. I'm holding him for the rest of the year, though. Just like, I mean, like everyone said, starting pitching has kind of been a wasteland this year anyway, so I'm going to hold him unless I have to drop him, but I like Tropiano still.
Yeah, I'm, you know, for me in deeper mixed leagues, I'm kind of cutting bait, you know, because he doesn't have that high of upside. He's an okay guy, but if I need that roster space, I don't mind cutting bait. You know, I think, you know, his strand rate or left on base rate was almost 85% this year, and his whip was over 1.5. So, I mean, he really wasn't doing that much for you, and the regression was definitely coming. You know, his xFIP or expected ERA on Baseball HQ was 4.7. So you're looking at a guy that really, you know, was bound to regress quite a bit before this shoulder problem, which shoulder is also a scary, you know, injury in itself. So I think I'm okay cutting bait, but if you have the space, I don't mind holding on to him, you know, especially since we've been kind of waiting on him for a while. Eli, what do you feel about Tropiano?
Damn it, Mike, you stole all my material.
Hold on a second, though. Robbie Ray just homered for the Diamondbacks, so I just want to kind of throw that out there. He homered on Chris Archer. So if you guys don't think Chris Archer's going bad, then
I hate baseball.
Holy cow.
Anyway, sorry, I just had to stop the podcast. Yeah. This is the second day in a row I've stopped the podcast due to some type of Rays game problem.
And we're the homers, huh? And I'm the Cardinal homer?
I know, right? I know. Go ahead, Eli.
Yeah, I mean, you stole everything I wanted to say. He's a whip killer. The guy just walks way too many dudes. Like, I know he's gonna, you know, he's getting a good amount of strikeouts, but I don't care. I'm not going to ruin my whip just for one strikeout per inning. And he's on a bad team as well, so the wins are going to be hard to come by. I know it's probably only going to be a minimum stay on the DL, but I'm not stashing him. The ground ball rate is also way down. And like you said, he's been stranding runners at a really lucky rate, and the FIP is 4.62. So I'm not buying him.
Ryan, do you feel any differently?
Not really. I feel the same way. The peripherals tell us he's actually league average at best starter, given the wildness and the fly ball rate. And then you throw a shoulder on top of that, and I am running away from Mr. Tropiano.
I completely agree. I think that you're running away unless you have the space and kind of hold on to it for a little bit. The next guy we'll talk about looks like he's about 55 years old based on the MILB picture that Matt showed us before the podcast started. But Mr. Tommy Joseph, Ryan, why don't you give us a little bit of a background on Mr. Joseph and what you think about him for this year?
Yeah. So yeah, he looks old. Go with that. But I think he's going to have a great shot to play first base for the Phillies. Ryan Howard's finally in. I think he's in his last year of his deal. Philly fans will be happy to hear that. But Joseph, you know, he's 24. Pretty interesting story. Dealt with some concussions throughout his minor league career, hitting 300, four homers in almost 60 at bats.
Actually, so five homers. He just popped one against Hector Rondon a couple minutes ago.
Did he? Off of Rondon?
Yeah.
The thing that worries with me with Joseph, I think the power is going to be there, is his plate approach in the major league level so far. Again, just 57 at-bats, but a 2% walk rate is terrible, 300 on base average. So I think he's got some ways to go, but I think he's going to play, and if you play in NL only, you are going to earn a roster spot. So I'm not super high on him, but if you need a guy in your corner slot, he'll play and be able to produce something, at least in the power category.
Yeah, I think he's a corner NL only play. You know, I mean, just to put it simply, he's a guy that I think will end up, if he gets full time at bats the rest of the way, I think he's going to hit, you know, close to 15 home runs or so total for the season. And, you know, with that comes probably a batting average that's sitting somewhere in the 260 to 270 range. And, you know, I mean, he plays in a good ballpark. You know, he plays for a team that's going to give him a ton of playing time, especially since Ryan Howard is essentially done, for lack of any other better terms. And I think he'll get the run. So I think that Joseph is definitely a corner for NL only. Matt, do you feel any differently?
No, I don't. The walk rate instantly turns me off of him. But one thing you kind of touched on is he will get playing time, and he might bat close to the middle of the order if he's not already, because he's going to hit behind Odubel Herrera, who gets on base a lot. So maybe things can happen, but he looks like he's 55, so I'm out.
Eli, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, the one walk, 15 strikeouts scares me. And also, like Ryan said, the guy had a ton of concussion issues. He played 58 games in 2015, 27 in 2014, 36 in 2013. He's got a 306 career OBP in the minors and only a 427 slugging. So I guess ride him while he's hot for now. But first sign of trouble, I'm getting rid of this guy.
All right, geez, you're so negative. You're such a negative.
I'm a very negative person. It's not rare that I don't slam one of these players that we talk about.
Well, this player we're going to bring up, there's no possible way you can be negative on him. can you? That's very true. It's Corey Seager. And, you know, especially me prior to the season starting, I was not particularly in. I thought that he was going at...
You were not.
Yeah, I was not. Exactly. I thought that the draft price was way too high, and I felt like he would have to do exactly what he's doing now, probably a little better, to fulfill that draft slot. And, you know, damn it, he really has. He's been absolutely amazing thus far. Five home runs in the last 4 days. Yes, 14 already for the season. Literally, he is the reason the Dodgers have any offense at this point. You know, just a team that really hasn't done well offensively. But my question is, do we think that he is going to be a top three shortstop the rest of the way, which is pretty much what he's been doing? Eli, I'll start with you.
Mike, I was just about to say, maybe you should stick to hosting and not giving fantasy analysis. What do you think?
No.
We had a side bet that Corey Seager would hit 20 homers this year. I said he would. You said he wouldn't. So I think I win that.
Yeah, you probably have. But the season's not over.
No, you're right.
Yeah, I'm buying the top three shortstop, I think. I mean, he was incredible last year, and I know it's a small sample size, but this recent hot streak has shown that last year, you know, he's capable of doing that at a really young age. He's only 22. He's got elite power for a shortstop. Obviously, hitting in one of the best pitcher's parks isn't holding him back whatsoever. He's been killing it at home. I mean, he's shown that he's going to be a legit asset and an average, and he gets on base enough to score a ton of runs. He's got a great contact rate for a guy that's got a good amount of power. I'm loving him.
Yeah, I really have changed my complete tune on him, you know, and part of my argument coming into this year was that I didn't think the power was going to hold up. You know, that's why I made that bet with Matt. I didn't think he was going to be able to continue what he did in his small sample size last year, but everything is really falling right in line with that. You know, especially that metric that we talk about for HQ, that expected power index, is exactly the same as he did in that, you know, short, small sample size last season. Ryan, how do you feel about Corey Seager, and how did you feel about him before the season started as well?
I was kind of with you, Mike. I was down on him more than anyone that I knew, just because he only had 98 career at bats at the major league level. I think that's a lot of risk. But like you said, you know, everything had to go right, and it has for Seager to do what he's done. So we're starting to get, you know, a bigger picture of what he can do. And you guys touched on this: the power's there, the plate skills are there. There's really no holes in this guy's game. He's a left-handed hitter, but he's demolished lefties this year as well. He's got a 904 OPS and an 80% contact rate against left-handed pitching. I would put him probably, depending on your league, I don't know if Machado counts as a shortstop, but if we're talking Machado, those guys are 1 and 2, Seager and Machado.
Yeah, it's crazy. I still want to go Correa and Bogarts over him, personally. I don't think that this continues. But at the same time, you know, maybe I just need to stop, you know, thinking that Corey Seager is going to keep, proving me wrong or whatever. I guess I need to believe a little bit more. But if I had to rank, you know, the shortstops the rest of the way, I think I would still put, you know, Correa, Bogarts, and whoever else I just said in front of them. Sorry, I can't think. Oh, Machado. Matt, how do you feel about these guys?
I pretty much agree with everything you guys said. He's been better than anyone really expected, I think. As far as top three shortstop, I was going to make the point about Machado, but you guys kind of took that from me. But top three, top five shortstop, it doesn't matter. He's still really, really fucking good. So hopefully you guys all got a piece of him somewhere.
Now, in terms of speed, what do we think the speed's going to be the rest of the year? Because that can kind of hold him back
from a
couple of the other shortstops, you know, particularly, you know, somebody like Bogarts, who will steal double-digit bases. You know, Machado really hasn't been stealing much. But, I guess shortstop as a whole really hasn't seen a ton of stolen bases, except for Jonathan Villar, who's just been absolutely crushing it there. But do you guys think that he'll steal more bases going forward? I mean, he has one on the season.
No, I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, he just doesn't run. He's got some speed, but
I guess the real question for me is, I think consensus is Machado, Correa, top two shortstops. Is Seager or Bogarts, who do you prefer? I mean, that's a toss-up for me. I don't think Bogarts is as good as he's playing. So for me,
it's Bogarts because he is an asset in batting average. He also plays in a lineup that is much better than the Dodgers, which obviously accumulates in the runs and RBI categories. Now, the home runs is a landslide. He's not going to get, you know, he's obviously not going to hit as many as Seager. But I think the stolen bases will be in the favor of Bogarts as well. You know, so that's the only reason I kind of tip that side. And if you own Bogarts anywhere, I mean, I own him in a couple leagues, and I didn't own him last year. I mean, he's just been a really awesome guy to kind of just give you a solid floor for your offense. I mean, he just continually rakes, and you don't have to worry about him, which I can't tell you how great that really is. You know, every year that I've played fantasy, I've always kind of, you know, thrown shortstop out the door and had to kind of mix and match. But having Bogarts on your team, it's just an awesome feeling to be able to set it and forget it with him. Not that you can't with, you know, somebody like Seager or the Correas of the world, Machado and all that, but overall it's just been really nice with Bogarts. You guys have any do you guys like Bogarts, or I guess you like Seager more than Bogarts, Eli and Ryan?
I do too.
Yeah. Bogarts.
All right.
Let's, I got Machado, Seager, Correa, Bogarts. They're all sick, but
they're all about the same. Except for VR. I mean, VR is obviously the top guy. I mean,
I think Trey Turner probably above all of them, but no.
All right, well, let's talk about a couple young guys really fast. First one is Jurickson Profar, which, you know, I'm going to give myself a little bit of a hand, because last year at the end of the year, or actually really the second half of last year, I was pretty much saying to all keeper dynasty owners that you need to continue to keep your eye on Profar, and you also need to make sure that you know, possibly buy low on him in keeper and dynasty leagues as well, because the shoulder issues just had gotten to a point where he couldn't play. Now this year, it seems like everything has kind of fallen into place, and he's healthy. He's led off, you know, in all 16 games that he's led off, he's gotten a hit. In 8 of the 10 games he's played in so far this year, he's scored a run. The guy is, I mean, not counting tonight's game, he's hitting almost 400 and is limited at bats, a couple home runs, but he's here to stay. Prince Fielder has sat the last few games in favor of him. They actually worked him out at first base a little bit to, you know, give him some more versatility, but I'm all aboard the Jurickson Profar train. How about you, Ryan?
I mostly am. The only thing that concerns me a little bit is just I just want to see him hold up over a longer period. He's had so many problems with his shoulder, but obviously playing DH and, like you said, taking some time at first base is only going to help that. So Texas wants him to play. So, I'm in on him. It's obviously not going to keep this level. His BABIP super high. He's got a .390 batting average. So obviously going to come down a little bit. But as long as he's hitting, he's going to play, and he's going to hit in a great lineup.
How about you, Eli?
I think people need to slow the roll just a little bit on this guy. I like him. You know, hitting atop a good lineup in a good park. You know, it's not a lot of middle infielders that hit well. So there's plenty of reasons to like him. But like Ryan said, this guy gets hurt all the time. And it's seriously been – he hasn't been, like, legit fantasy viable, like, statistically-wise since 2012. Like, it's just been a long time since he's been a productive player at any level. He also has only attempted 6 steals in 103 career games. So I don't think you're going to get as many steals as people might have thought back when he was a big-time prospect. I like him, but just relax with him. That's all I'm saying.
Shocker, Eli's negative on players.
Eli's that right now happens. Afraid. Profar's only 23, man.
I know.
I'm all in on Profar for this year. I'm a little worried about the durability of the shoulder holding up, but here's a fun stat for you. Jurickson Profar has 23 total bases in 1 week, and Prince Fielder has 57 total bases all season. So
nice. I liked your pronunciation, too. It was like,
yeah,
Profar.
Yeah, I was just...
Like Jafar or something from Aladdin.
Jafar. Jurickson Profar.
Jafar.
Profar.
Jurickson Jafar.
JJ. Like JJ for short. His name's
gone. But no, I'm all in on Profar. Especially he's going to have eligibility at a lot of spots eventually. I think he's kind of going to be a super sub guy. He's going to hit leadoff in a great lineup, good ballpark. I'm in until at this point, if you're in a redraft league, you are paying nothing for him. So just ride him. And if he breaks, then... That sucks, but he breaks. Then you just cut him, whatever.
Mixed he wasn't leagues. Exactly murdering it in AAA. Like, I don't know.
The thing is, though, is that you have to kind of trust the pedigree a bit and also look at the fact that the last few years he hasn't been healthy. You know, no, he's not a 400 hitter, and no, he's not going to hit, 20 home runs the rest of the way or something like that. But in terms, they're batting him leadoff. He's going to get a ton of runs scored. He's probably going to end up with, 12 home runs on the season or so, which is solid. He'll steal a few bases. I mean, I think that overall he adds a good amount of production for you. How about a little bit of would you rather? Would you rather have him or Josh Harrison the rest of the way?
Maybe Harrison for me.
Yeah, I'm going Harrison too.
I'm going Profar.
How about him or Jonathan Scope?
Profar.
Profar.
Profar. I would say, though, if I'm in a redraft league, I'm definitely looking at selling Profar. I think his stock's super high right now, and you can kind of sell that hype in 2016 leagues.
And I can agree with that. And really, my hype is more for Keeper Dynasty, since the right. majority of the shares I have of him are in those formats. But I completely agree with that. If you have him in redraft, I think the hype is going to get a little high for him. I mean, just as much as I'm high on him, I think that's a very good strategy, is to kind of capitalize on that value. So that's a good point. Let's kind of move on to a few younger players here. That way we can kind of wrap up in a fairly shorter. Let's talk about Trey Turner, who I just don't even know what to really say about this. I know that Eli's going to be super negative on it, which I actually agree with at this point.
He should be. He has every right to be.
Dusty Baker, he goes 3-for-3 in his
I've never seen a player go 3-for-3 and then get sent down.
Get benched.
Yeah, he got benched. Well, this is my issue, is that he only played one of the days that he was up, while Ryan Zimmerman was on paternity leave. And then he gets sent down. I don't know why they brought him up in the first place. Eli, I know you and I both are really high on Turner, so I'll let you kind of vent about it.
Well, Mike, you're forgetting that Danny Espinosa is like an Ozzie Smith-level defender.
Well, we will mention this. We'll preface this by saying, Eli and I were talking the other night, and we looked up Danny. There was also talk about Turner not being ready defensively. He has 8 errors at, shortstop or second base this year in the minors. And Danny Espinosa, according to Fangraphs, defensive metrics, he is measured as a top 5 shortstop defensively. So that's kind of, I think that
he's also got a 291 OBP. So there's that.
Yeah, and Justin Mason's in love with Espinosa. But how about this? We'll keep it kind of more realistic. When do you think Turner will get the permanent call up to the major leagues, Eli?
I'm going to say 2 weeks, but I've been hearing some rumblings that it's possible that it's like a August, September type of situation. I'd find that hard to believe that even they won't mess this up that badly. But, I mean, I don't know, man. I also do think we overrate Turner just a little bit anyway. Like, he's a good player, there's no doubt, and he's better than what they have currently. But it's not like he's going to be some fantasy stud that you need to – you just have to have stash on your roster. So I feel like I've been wasting away my life having him on my rosters for the last couple of weeks.
Well, I think he's automatic speed, and I also think that mm-hmm. he would take away that leadoff role from Ben Revere. I mean, he hit leadoff.
I don't think so.
I think that he would. You know,
Dusty Baker would never allow that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, like, if they've waited this long to call him up and they just send him right back down after 3-for-3, what do you think they're going to immediately put him in the leadoff spot? I don't know.
Maybe that is a little bit outrageous to expect Dusty Baker to do that. But Ryan, how do you feel about the Trey Turner situation? And if you're holding him in a league, you know, what are you kind of doing with him right now? Are you kind of just trying to shop him based on his, you know, very good game and seeing if somebody will bite, or are you kind of holding on and hoping he gets called up soon?
No, that's what I would do. I would shop him. I mean, if Washington brings him up for the weekend, hits 3-for-3 and never plays again, they send him back down. How can we realistically predict what they're going to do with him the rest of the way?
Agreed.
So there's so much uncertainty there, you know, with minor leaguers in general, with rookies in general, there's skill uncertainty at the major league level. But then you throw in, you know, whatever they're doing with his playing time situation. I would shop him around, shop that 3-for-3 and tell your league mates he's going to be back up in 2 weeks. But really, we don't know.
Yeah. Matt, how do you feel about this?
I'm going to do my Eli Rosenzweig impression and tell you that I don't like Turner for this year. I think he's a bit overrated. I think what he's doing in AAA, he's not obviously going to do that in the major leagues. I think he's a bottom of the order profile bat anyways. I don't like the hit tools as much as other people do. I don't think leadoff hitter will ever happen if Dusty Baker's in charge of that team. I think he's going to settle in the eighth spot, maybe the ninth spot. Maybe he'll like wrap around like Addison Russell style last year. But that's hypothetically, that's just dreaming, because he's not going to come up with Dusty Baker and get meaningful at bats unless Espinoza gets hurt. And I think that's the best option we have right now. Just hope that happens, which you don't like to. But if that's only if you have Turner, that's your way out right now. But he's an instant source of steals. But is he going to run that much if in front of Harper hitting ninth? Who knows? It's a messy situation. I'm glad I don't have any shares of him.
I might hire Jeff Galooly to take out Denny Espinoza. I hope you guys get that reference.
Who?
Jeff Galooly.
Oh, I don't get that at all.
That's the guy who took out Nancy Kerrigan's kneecap. Oh, God.
That's like the most messed up thing ever brought up on this show. Congratulations. Showing
your
Eli,
age,
you're
man.
An asshole.
Showing your age. You're like 40.
40 I'm 30. Go hell.
All right, let's talk about another young... a young up-and-coming prospect that was number one on prospect lists for, you know, a couple of years, actually. Byron Buxton, who you couldn't have found a person more low on Buxton coming into the year. I felt like he did not have enough seasoning in AAA. I still don't feel like he's fully ready to be in the major leagues, but he's back. And the last few games that he's been up, he's been fairly productive. You know, he's gone three straight games with multiple hits. You know, I still don't fully buy into it, but I do know that in a couple of deeper leagues that I'm in, I was able to grab him off waivers and just kind of stash him for a couple weeks because I knew he was going to come back up at some point. But, you know, I think he's going to be a guy that offers some speed. I'm still a little bit worried about what to really expect. I mean, his strikeout rate last season in the majors was 34%. This year so far in his minimal time, it's been 44%. You know, I mean, when you look at the AAA numbers, they aren't as bad, but I still think that this is a guy that needs a ton of seasoning. But for fantasy purposes, you know, I think he's going to be a guy that hits, you know, lower 200s, offers some double-digit speed. Hopefully he gets better as the season goes on. That's kind of where I'm at with Buxton. Ryan, where are you at with Byron Buxton?
I'm totally selling Buxton in a lot of formats, and here's why. Not only in redraft leagues, you can kind of, you know, Mike, you mentioned a few multi-hit games in a row, but he's already hitting on rookie eligibility for at-bat, so he's not going to be rookie eligible next year. In a lot of dynasty formats, you know, that dings their value, that you have to, you know, either keep him as a major league player, and I do not think he's anywhere close to a major league regular right now. You look at those plate skills, you know, they're not bad, they're just atrocious. A 2.7% walk rate, 41% strikeout rate. You know, long term, yeah, but he's already piling up those MLB at bats, and you know, we'll be waiting, I think, for a little while for that long awaited breakout.
Yeah, and he's batting ninth as well. You know, he's not really in a prime spot in Atlanta. The Twins lineup has been crazy bad this year. I mean, it's getting to the point where it's embarrassing, and you know, their situation, I just don't know what they were really doing before the season started.
Gee, who could have foreseen this coming? Oh, wait, me.
Is there a negative voice in the background? Eli, is that you? Eli.
Yeah, I tried to warn everyone that the Twins were going to be dreadful this year, but nobody listened.
Eli Rosenzweig, Friends with Fantasy Benefits, Rain Cloud.
Just follows I like us that. Everywhere.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But how do you feel about Buxton? I know it's going to be bad.
No, I feel like if you need a jolt and I mean, I wouldn't rely on him if I'm, I don't know, I just feel like if you're a little bit lower in the standings and maybe you've had some injuries or you're just trying to catch lightning in a bottle, there's a potential there. He certainly looked a lot better. He hasn't, I know the two walks and 30 strikeouts are kind of petrifying, and the fact that he hasn't really run that much in either AAA or the majors this year, but I'd roll the dice. Hope, you know, it's not like this is going to be much cost in a redraft league at this point, so just try him out.
I think if he has a couple more hot games, I think the cost will go up substantially. I think that, you know, Ryan makes a great point that, you know, he is easily a guy that you could probably sell right now because of the name value being so high still. You know, I don't think Buxton is going to be good this year. I was able to acquire him for literally nothing in multiple leagues, so I'm kind of just sitting on him for a second. You know, I'm hoping that he does catch fire a bit. That way I can sell him, but we'll kind of see. I don't believe in him for this year. Matt, do you feel any differently?
No, I'm glad I sold in our 20 team dynasty. I'm glad I sold him off this winter. It seems to be working out for me. It's the last six games, he's hitting .434, multi-hit games in three straight, like you guys said. But he's still during that stretch when he's hitting, he's still got six strikeouts and zero walks. Like, I think Brandon Wood's embarrassed of that ratio. So,
oh no,
Brandon Wood, get out of here.
Oh,
Ian Stewart, Ian Stewart's looking at him like, come on, bro.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's move on to for Buxton.
I think he's on break from his Knights warehouse job, Brandon Wood.
Let's move on to, I know a guy Ryan is loving this year, and a guy that was my preseason third base sleeper, absolutely doing great this year so far, Mr. Jake Lamb. He has 10 home runs, batting .270. I really don't find much with him that I dislike. You know, the places that I did get him were pretty deep, you know, mixed leagues and also at my NL only that I'm in. And I'm completely happy with him. I don't feel like I need to sell him. I kind of want to write out what he's going to do the rest of the way. Ryan, what's your outlook on Jake Lamb?
My outlook is very good on Jake Lamb. I really like what he's done at the plate this season. You kind of forget Lamb is still just 24. I think he played like 8 career games in AAA. That brought him right up to the major league level. He struggled in 2014. And then last year he started to turn around and then got hurt. And this year he's bumped up his walk rate, bumped up his contact rate. The power's been up as well. The only kind of warts in Lamb's profile are low fly ball rate down to like 30%. League average is around 35. So that's gonna squash his power a little bit. And he has been better. He's been pretty good against lefties in the minors, but that has not translated to major league production yet. I still think Arizona needs to give him a shot, and if they keep losing like they are, actually beating the Rays 2-1 right now.
Had to bring it up. couldn't control yourself.
But if I would love to see Arizona give Lamb a longer shot against left-handed pitching. That's really that next step for him. But I think he's got the power to hit 25, 30 home runs, and I think that 270, 275 batting average is going to stick. He's going to be one of the better National League third basemen this year.
Yeah, and what if they do not give him a shot, do you think that he's just going to be strictly a platoon player at least the rest of this season? Or do you legit, I mean, you watch the Diamondbacks every night. Do you think that there's a scenario where he could get full-time at-bats?
I think there's a scenario where he should. He's going to stay at third the whole time, and I think they just need to see what he can do. He's only got 100 at-bats against lefties in his career, and he's actually been a lot better against them this year, but only, you know, 30, 35 at-bats. So they need to give him that shot, but they haven't yet, so it's kind of unfortunate. One of the many unfortunate things about being a D-backs fan.
Yeah, Shelby Miller, I warned everybody. I warned you.
You did.
Eli, how do you feel about Jake Lamb?
And I'm impressed. He's on pace for like, what, 70 something extra base hits. He's getting a lot of doubles. He's on pace for 25 plus homers. He's getting a fair amount of walks, not striking out a huge amount, sprinkling in a couple of steals. And, you know, Arizona's a great place to hit. I was looking at his splits thinking that he's going to be much better at home than he was on the road, but nope, he's hitting pretty well in both places. There's a lot to like here.
Yeah, might I add, very good DFS play. I mean, he has, the multiple times that I've put him in for DFS, he has been amazing. So, I mean, I know that that's not something that season-long people necessarily, you know, put any stock into, but overall, he really does well whenever you kind of call upon him in DFS. You know, Matt, how do you feel about Jake Lamb this year?
I like Lamb. He's a good post-hype guy. Everyone kind of wrote him off. At least that's the fantasy league, man. We tend to do that. Matt, as a community, we kind of write people off a little bit too early. Maybe that happened here. I mean, he's still super young. The minor league pedigree is phenomenal, and I mean, I'm just going to be repeating what everyone's already said, but I like the guy a lot, and if you have him, enjoy it, because he's going to be a star.
All right, let's move on to our last player, and this guy has been an absolute train wreck this year. It's Mr. Michael Pineda, and really, I don't know what to make of him, because you know, he's somebody like his xFIP is sitting at 3.5. You know, the ground ball rate has never been amazing in his career, but you know, his swing strike rate is up there in the top 15 in all of baseball, and his velocity is fine. His strikeout rate is great. It's a little bit over 10 per 9. You know, we're looking at a guy that is showing pretty solid skills, but the big issue is his home runs. I mean, he's giving up an almost 20% home run to fly ball rate, and you know, that's obviously kind of sinking all of his numbers as a whole. You know, his ERA is over 6.4 right now, which is, I mean, even the most pessimistic people in the world couldn't have predicted that so far for Michael Pineda. You know, me personally, I don't think that there's any way it stays this bad. You know, it's one thing if there was something glaring in his, in his skills that were showing me that he is just bound to regress. But I mean, lefties are hitting him at a 333 clip right now. That's never happened in his career. You know, also righties are hitting him at a 310 clip. I mean, his career is 243 and 254 respectively for both of those. I cannot see it staying like this. I think that this is a buying opportunity. Can I promise that is going to work out? No, I can't. But I cannot see it staying this bad, at least. Matt, how do you feel about Pineda?
He's been pretty bad. I'm going to try to hold him if I can. I'm like you, and I think there's a little bit of a rebound coming, but I don't know how well it would be. I mean, the FIP still translates to a 4-3, which isn't that great. The Ks are still... Well, they're not there right now, but oh, yeah, they are there. The Ks are still there. The walks are a little high. Yankee Stadium's a rough park to pitch in. The team's bad. I'm still trying to hold them, but if I need the roster spot, I'm going to cut them. But if you can hold them, see if you can do it.
I've seen him out there in a few AL-only leagues. I actually picked him up in a couple of AL-only leagues, which I think is pretty crazy.
AL-only is kind of crazy. Yeah, he needs to be on AL. AL-only is crazy. I was talking about mixed leagues.
But I mean, last year in Yankee Stadium, he put up a 4.5 ERA at home, which obviously isn't outrageous. Right now, this year, it's 7.48. You know, I mean, I think that, the home ballpark is a hindrance to his value, but overall, I don't think it's something that's going to crush him. You know, I think that there's a little bit of a rebound coming for him, barring some type of injury, which he has been somebody that has been injured in the past with, you know, shoulder issues and, you know, a myriad of different issues, actually. And he's also had that, you know, notorious pine tar incident. So maybe he's just not using the pine tar anymore and is kind of getting into his results. But Eli, how do you feel about Pineda?
That 410 BABIP.
Yeah, like I said, the home runs are really kind of going into everything. Now, BABIP isn't something that's measured, you know, into the home runs, but, you know, I feel like I don't have his pitch mix up in front of me on Brooks Baseball, but I'm assuming that there's some type of issue with what he's doing with his pitches, or, you know, whether he's throwing one pitch more than, you know, he has in the past. That's some data that I actually probably should look up, but overall, there's got to be a reason for it. Eli, how do you feel about Pineda as a whole for the rest of the year?
I think I agree with you guys that, you know, there's going to be some type of bounce back. But, I mean, he'd have to really bounce back for him to be relevant. I mean, I like buying him in an AL only and trading, you know, getting him at a low price. But, like, even if he does turn things around, is he really that much above the proverbial Wandy line? Like, I'd rather just use that spot to stream guys or have a reliever help my ratios. Or it's got to be a pretty deep league for me to care about Michael Pineda at this point.
Yeah, and, you know, let me preface this by saying, like, I play in essentially all deep leagues. You know, the shallowest league that I play in is, you know, 112 team, you know, keeper league, and it feels like I'm picking up all-stars anytime I do grab a guy off the waiver wire. You know, so somebody like Pineda, I don't think is somebody that you need to hold on to in that size of format, but we do try and kind of cater to all size leagues. Overall, I think an AL only is somebody that you should kind of keep around and hope everything turns around a bit and, you know, at least keep him on your bench while he's, you know, struggling like this. But overall, I can't see it staying this way at all. Ryan, do you share a different sentiment?
No, I'm buying him. I just cannot believe how his luck indicators, how bad they've been. Over 400 BABIP, 63% left on base rate. League average is like the mid-70s. You mentioned that 90% homer fly rate. And we're in June. That's just insane. I no pitcher that I've seen has been this unlucky. The skills are there. He's got 10 strikeouts to 9. 4.5 strikeouts to walk rate. So I'm buying him even in mid-sized mixed leagues. I think you focus on the skills, and this guy has it. His skills for the last 2 years have been ace level, and his velocity's up this year, so I'm actually not too worried about an injury. I'm buying him. It's not going to cost you that much to obtain him right now, so why not?
Yeah,
Rob Ray just got another hit against Chris Archer. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Was it an RBI? No, it wasn't an RBI.
No, but still.
Thank God. Jeez. Robbie Ray single-handedly crushing the Rays.
Yes.
I'm so done with Chris Archer. I can't even explain it. But that's going to do it for us. Matt, can you tell everybody what you're working on right now and where you can be reached and all that jazz?
Part two of my draft article is coming out, so hopefully you read the first one. I thought it was pretty good, but I'm biased. Twitter handle is MDTomp24, and I did pick Chris Archer to win the Cy Young Award this year, so I feel your pain.
I don't know why you're repeating that. That's literally the second or third time I've heard you say that, and that's not going to give you more credentials.
That's a Chris Sale.
No.
Saying.
Well, that's not bad. That's a rather decent pick.
No, what I'm saying is I'm smart.
That's, and he's literally like one of five players that you're not negative on. So, Eli, why don't you tell people where you can be reached on Twitter?
Well, actually,
Rain Clown on Twitter.
I'm actually negative about Sale because he hasn't won in like three straight starts. Fuck him. The White Sox have no chance unless he wins every goddamn start. So screw him and screw Quintana. But anyway, you can find me on Twitter.
Thunderstorm.
At EliFWFB. Make sure you check out the Tuesday DFS shows with me and Cam. And the Thursday show with me, Justin, and Chuck.
Awesome. Ryan, what are you working on currently, and what else are you doing over at Baseball HQ, other than just you know, appearing on the podcast and doing your Facts Flukes article? What are you doing over there? By the way, if people don't know, Ryan and I both do things for Baseball HQ. Obviously, he does a bit more, but you know, it's nice getting to be kind of your brother in there as opposed to just a guy that reads your stuff.
Yeah, man, it's awesome to have you on the staff. You're doing a killer job with your daily matchups column. So keep doing your thing, man. But yeah, I'm on HQ's podcast every week. I do a Facts Flukes column every Tuesday, and also cover playing time in the NL West every Friday. So I'm keeping busy over there. We're a subscription site, but I obviously think we're well worth the shot, despite, you know, having Mike on staff. But but no, give us a look. We've got a free Friday newsletter that you can sign up online and get a kind of a sampling of what we do over there. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter at RyanBHQ. And it's been awesome, guys. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you. It's been awesome to have you on. We're also in the AAA Fantasy League together, which Justin and I co-own a team, and it has not gone well to this point. pretty much like any team that Justin has to this point, it's just not gone well. But hopefully,
you guys need to get some lives.
We do. We definitely do. But hopefully, we'll turn. How are you doing in the AAA League, Ryan?
I'm middle of the pack. My top two pitchers were Felix and Tyson Ross, so I'm hurt
nice.
There.
Those are awesome picks. We haven't even talked about Felix, but you know, his kind of outcome or whatever isn't looking too good for the rest of the year. He's just not been good. It's been unfortunate with Felix, but hopefully he kind of turns it around a bit. I mean, there's no way he's this bad. It's kind of the Pineda syndrome. There's just no way.
Is the calf injury real, or is it a fake for an arm?
I don't think it's fake. They're contending. I think they're trying.
Just asking you. Yeah, I didn't know if his arm was hurt. They just called it a calf strain.
No, I mean, his velocity is down. Everyone makes a big deal about that, but his velocity has been down 7 of the last 8 years, I think. So that's something he's used to. Yeah. His changeup, his curveball are amazing. I think he's going to be okay. But yeah, I don't think it's a deeper issue than what we're hearing.
Yeah, I agree. I just, you know, I think that he's always been somebody that's good been here. Able to pitch. It's not just the, you know, the fact that his velocity is going down. You know, CeCe Sabathia, if he can do what, if CeCe Sabathia can pitch, you know, with his less than terrible stuff or more than terrible stuff, you know, I think that, you know, somebody like Felix Hernandez can kind of turn it around. But regardless, you can catch me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. You can listen to the DFS podcast on Fridays. You can listen to Matt and I's show on Mondays. You can read my daily matchups column up at Baseball HQ. It's behind a paywall, but like Ryan said, it's definitely worth it. It's a place that I've gone for a myriad of years now. I completely love it there. That's why I wanted to get on there. So I'm happy with it. And also, please go ahead and go to the site. It's a brand new revamped friendswithfantasybenefits.com. All types of interactions we can do on there. We can start forums and kind of make it really interactive for you guys and us. So please be sure to check that out. And for Matt, Eli, and Ryan, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Hook. Falling in love is never by the book. Getting close beneath the blanket of a million stars. Matt, what the hell is this thing?
It's obviously a Michael Jordan meme on Prince Fielder's body.
Oh, my God.
God. Duh.
I'm sitting here trying to do the outro, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? That is Prince Fielder with Michael Jordan.
There we go.
Oh, the Tommy Joseph.
There we go, the Tommy Joseph.
Dude, the only thing that would make it better is if he had like a gray beard, like a David Ross beard. If he had the David Ross beard, it would be like the best thing ever.
Oh, that's absurd. Both of those pictures are absurd.
It's pretty easy to pile on this guy at this point, but I'm going with Prince Fielder. I don't think he's going to – I think he's hurt, and I don't think – Texas has a lot of other options. Later on in the show here, but Texas has a lot of options, and Houston's coming, like we talked about.
Hey, Matt. So,
yeah, I can't hear him, like, at all.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Try your power out and see what's, or unplug your mic and plug it back in and see what's going on.
All right, sorry about that.
No, that's cool. Sounds like he's punching in.
Logan Morrison just struck out. The world shocker. Is destroyed.
Shocker. No.
No. Is it your internet? Maybe.
Yes, it could be.
That sounded better.
Yeah, it sounds a tad better.
Better now?
No.
No,
not really.
What the fuck? It's the same exact setup I always use. I don't understand it. And it was fine yesterday, wasn't it, Mike?
It's getting better. I would say just keep talking and see if maybe it kind of...
Yeah, sorry about that.
Talk about how good the Cardinals are.
Yeah. They're not very good. I don't know what's going on with this. Why isn't it working?
I would say... Do you have, I don't know, you're in a hotel room, right?
Yep.
Maybe reconnect to your Wi-Fi?
Yeah, I'm going to jump on. Hold on.
And he totally took my dude, by the way.
Prince? Well, yeah, actually,
now you have time.
I was planning on talking about a couple different guys. Gomez is one of them, so I agree with that one.
I wasn't going to talk about Gomez because I'm wanting to still believe.
I actually thought the notes read, one struggling veteran who you think will turn it around. And I had Justin Upton.
Oh, dang. He hit a two-run bomb tonight.
Yeah, stole a base, too.
It's a combo meal.
It's a combo meal. Combo.
Combo.
It's a combo meal. Home run plus steal.
All I can think of when I hear that is Tristan Cockcroft dancing in that place.